This is the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast.
So we're back here on the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast, and I'm having a bit of deja vu with my guest, the great Bo Bonner. You go by Bo Bonner, right?
Yeah, well, I've been contemplating being really snooty and going like by all three names, Bo Gibson Bonner,
right,
or B.G. Bonner, which sounds more deplorable.
Oh, definitely B.G. Definitely. But there's a lot of fun acronyms you could, you know, come up with for that, I think. So maybe that's better. I don't know. But Bo is a professor and the director of campus ministry at Des Moines Mercy College of Health Sciences. Did I get that right?
Mercy College of Health Science in Des Moines. But yeah, so MCHS, that's the easy way to throw it out there.
Right. And he also hosts a radio show called The Uncommon Good on Iowa Catholic Radio. That show's available on the interwebs on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and p.m., right?
Yep, and on iTunes, whenever you want it.
And I'm honored to be here with Bo. Bo actually was stupid enough to have me on his radio show along with our mutual friend, Dr. Bud Marr, and he assures me it will air eventually.
No, it will. It's going to air within the 12 days of Christmas. It's our fun, seasonal, light, happy episode. So, yeah, I think it's December 28th. So
awesome.
That's kind of like the Feast of Holy Innocence. Like, that has you written all over it, right?
It does. I am holy, innocent in both senses of those words. So here we go. We're gonna go ahead and just reveal that we're having a bit of deja vu because we may have done a very similar podcast in the recent past.
Yeah, it was, you know, like the song, I don't, for anybody's soul, I won't recommend you go actually listen to it, but Tenacious D has a song called Tribute, which is about, the song is a tribute to the best song in the world that they forgot. And I feel like this podcast is a tribute to what might have been humanity's greatest contribution to the podcast genre, but evidently the sound was garbled beyond recognition, as you tell me.
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and apologize for the audio quality of Bo's voice. That's not his fault. It's totally my fault because I'm an idiot and I cannot get the podcasting software to correctly record him via a normal microphone means, so he has to be appearing via cell phone. Yesterday, we tried to do it the right way, and we recorded an entire podcast that was almost an hour long, I guess like 45 minutes, and it was really good, very spontaneous, and it's lost to all but my archives. For a very high fee, I could let you have that original audio, dear listener, but it's just so bad, he's basically inaudible. So we went ahead, and instead of me trying to distort his voice and make it further difficult to listen to, we're just going to record the dang thing without spontaneity, because I don't really believe in spontaneity as a philosophical principle. How about you, Bo?
Yeah. You know what I was actually thinking the whole time? I was all like, this can be like the AI movie. We'll talk about that later, whether you're ever going to dare to make a podcast about AI, the Kubrick Spielberg mashup. But I think about that very end scene, you know, and so maybe someday aliens will come and the one wish of the android robot child will be to hear that podcast that we recorded yesterday clearly.
That's right. Yes. Spoiler alert, by the way. That movie's only, what, 16 years old now?
Yeah.
I have it on VHS, so it can't be too new. But that would be an interesting one, actually. I would go into that basically fresh. I have no recollection of that movie whatsoever.
Well, I'm up for any time wrestling with Kubrick movies. Not because necessarily I think I would never say any of them are my favorites, but they all mess with my mind, and I need help processing them. Other than Dr. Strangelove, I always feel like I'm going up and like, please tell me that you've seen Full Metal Jacket so we can talk about it. And people are like, go away or I'll call the cops.
So have you seen Full Metal Jacket?
Oh, yeah.
You've seen every single one, including Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, no, I did not see that one. I've tried to forget about that one.
Good.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's not going to come on the podcast, so don't worry about it. What we're here to talk about today, though, is something that apparently people enjoy, which is the Star Wars.
The war
Yes, it's Battle of the TV Network Stars. And we're going to talk about Rogue One, which has made a bit of money from what I understand.
Gee whiz, man. You and I, what were we thinking when it came to choosing college degrees, philosophy, lawyering? We should have said, what's the college degree where you get to make them those movie pictures?
Exactly. Yeah, these pictures are moving. So the reason we want to talk about it is because we're both, I think, knowledgeable enough about Star Wars to have a bit of a fan's perspective on it, but maybe not so knowledgeable that it gets to be inside baseball. But I thought it might be fun, just to give some flavor here, to test Bo's level of Star Wars fandom. So, here we go. So here we go, Bo.
Bo's A-time.
Yeah. Now this is all unique. This is the spice of life right here. Do you own any Star Wars novels? And that includes like abridged movie versions of novels.
Okay, I do not currently own one. I had one, but man, that was a long time ago, and I do not remember it. But so I have one.
But you didn't just buy it, you actually read it?
Yeah, but I'm talking about, I was like 10 or something like that, so I cannot
still
recall
counts.
To you okay. What happened.
All right. Star Wars board games? Own any Star Wars board games?
No, but I not myself, but I consider that I honorary owned one. Like, one of the ways that Dr. Bud Marr, that I the co-host of the show, and actually the main way that I know you, we sort of bonded over playing Star Wars, what is that called? Epic Duels. So, even though I didn't own it myself, Epic Duels has a very big, large space in my heart in the mid-2000s.
Okie dokie. And what about Star Wars video games?
Again, I didn't own too many video game systems, but my cousin had Atari, and we played Empire Strikes Back on Atari for a severe amount of time. Now, okay. The thing about Atari games is, the only reason that they have anything to do with Star Wars is because the title says Star Wars, but that was enough for us.
Exactly. Yeah. That's awesome. It's kind of like the way those early like football games bore no resemblance to actual sports, but just because it said it was football, you know, you're all on board with it.
Right, exactly.
So here we go. I'm going to go ahead and judge you like a 6.5 to 7 Star Wars nerd. That sound about right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I always point out that I really do love Star Wars, and when I could, I thought it was the time was ripe. I showed every single movie to my children, but I've also had 4 children, and I feel like if you're going to broach that age territory, you may not have kids.
Yeah, I think you have to be single. That's a rule.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, you're like a Jedi, right? You can't get married.
It's exactly right. You're celibate. You're devoted entirely to Star Wars.
That's right.
So here we go. So what? Just give me your like 30-second take. What did you think of the movie when you saw it?
That you should go watch it, even if you don't like Star Wars. And in fact, I'd say that my first impression is the only people who won't like it or have a problem with it are people who already like Star Wars. It is fantastic. You know, it's a little more violent than many of them. It's not as violent or scary as 3. So, you know, I don't know, I'm an Okie, and I watch incredibly violent movies from very early on, being that sort of family. So I might not be the best judge, but I think kids really would love it. I was very impressed. I mean, I was really worried about it, you know, and I think it's even better than Episode 7, so I would definitely tell people to go watch it.
Okay, so I agree, and a lot of people are talking about the violence. It is violent, I guess, for a Star Wars movie, but they're saying, like, well, it's basically a war film, and I would just say, if you've seen, you know, like, Hacksaw Ridge, it's not a war film, okay? You don't have to worry about, like, guts being splattered or anything like that.
It's not Saving Private Ryan or Fury.
Yeah,
and
no.
Again, when people will bring up the violent stuff, I'm like, well, Episode 4, they destroy an entire planet, and you guys were all okay with that.
Yeah, but the special effects are so bad, no one cares. That's the problem.
That's right. Well, but, you know, the big thing I think you're right is, you know, I noticed that if you were a coroner in like the Star Wars universe, and you had to go look at all the myriad trail of dead, usually it'd be death by burn marks, because evidently you don't bleed when you're shot by a blaster. You just kind of have a black smudge where you were hit, and then you're dead.
That's awesome, yeah. In those original movies, I don't know if you ever saw a drop of blood, now that I think about it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, people would presumably be getting hacked in half by focused Kyber crystal light, but there was no blood. I guess you know what they would say is, like, it was so hot, Steve.
That's right.
That it would cauterize the wound when it cut it off.
Right, but then wouldn't you be able to sort of live, if, like, if they literally bisected you, couldn't you then live with your top half if it perfectly cauterized all of the remaining vital organs and veins?
So I think what we're saying is, like, the main way that people died from lightsabers is shock.
That's it. So. You're going to the shock. All right, so here we go. We're going to give a broad overview. I want to go a little bit through how this movie compares to the other Star Wars in the prequels and all that, and then we're gonna have a little spoiler section at the end, so you don't have to worry, peoples. If you haven't seen it, you can stick around for another few minutes. So let's just first of all talk about how this ties in to the fourth movie, right? I mean, the basic plot without spoilers is they're stealing the Death Star plans from the Empire, and I mean, it's pretty seamless. I'm not gonna get into spoilers yet, but It in a way it fixes some of the flaws of the fourth movie.
Yeah, and to be honest, I was wondering that myself. I mean, I knew it would be roughly between episode 3 and 4, but I think without spoiling it, we can say it really is more towards 4. So it's not like the midpoint or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite thing that I see on Facebook about this is someone is like, leaked on the news. Screenshots from the sequel to Rogue One, and just pictures of episode 4. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's funny, but, and it's true, but I think that's great.
Yeah, and to me, I think that's a great way to put it. I know we kind of, I forget where we ended up talking about this conversation, but I'll bring it up now. What I love about Rogue One, as far as like how it fits into the whole general mythology of Star Wars, is it does something to me that's very classical, medieval, as it were, when it comes to literature and how we tell stories. Is there was this one line, right, in episode 4 that birthed this entire film. And it's just, my thought is it's probably just a throwaway line. You know, you kind of have to, it's in episode 4 when they say, well, we got these Death Star plans, and they were, how did you put it, like we...
Yeah, many Bothans died trying to get us that information.
And so you go like, well, they have a MacGuffin, and they need to like throw in a few lines about, you know, just enough so that you're not questioning why do you have these plans. And so, like all great, awesome literature that already has an established canon, you know, they go, wow, let's make an entire story about, like, that one line. And that's just, to me, it's a fantastic, not just expansion or deepening, but maybe sort of even widening out how the entire story goes. And I think they pulled it off great.
Right, and that's another thing is, you know, for those who aren't nerds like us, a lot of the criticism in reviews comes from Star Wars fans who think that this movie betrays like the spirit of Star Wars somehow, because it's violent, because of whatever. There's no lightsabers prominently featured, things like that. And to me, it's like, no, this is what makes Star Wars great. It's, if Star Wars is a kind of pop culture mythology, then it's just like any other mythology or folklore. It gets passed down, and then it gets added to and extrapolated upon, and that's what makes it great, and that's what makes it a cultural moment. I love that they're telling their own version and adding to the canon of, you know, what happened with this one line. They're coming up with a backstory that's, you know, perhaps even equal to the film that the line came from.
Yeah, to me it seems like, if you look, and again, look, just to put a note here, a huge asterisk, no one, I don't think either you or I, are saying anything like, we should compare this to the Trojan War cycle, or anything insane like that.
No, Bo, I have to cut you off. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but you can go ahead and finish, you can finish.
To me, it's, you know, this is a movie about the Star Wars, and, you know, it's about space. space battles and space operas, so people shouldn't hyperventilate. But to use the analogy, you really kind of expand on establishments one of two ways. Like, you either keep telling the same story over and over again from a different angle, which to me would be awesome. I wish more actors would. I think it'd be cool if, like, five directors decided they were going to take one story and then just do it five ways. Or what you do is you kind of have this silver era literature where you do what Rogue One is doing, which is you take little parts of the main established myth, and then you kind of add, you know, meat to the bones of the skeleton of the myth. And, I mean, there's all sorts of ways you do this. You look at, like, the Trojan War, and then you have, like, later Greek people like Sophocles adding little pieces of the story. But, like, here it's the same sort of deal. Rogue One, instead of trying to do whatever it is that the first three episodes are doing, gee whiz, it actually does what we were saying there. It takes part of the skeleton of the myth and really fill it out so that the myth kind of breathes on its own. And again, if people are being grumpy about that, they must hate life, and, you know, they should just probably start eating oatmeal and hardtack and just sleeping most of the day, because probably most of life disappoints them.
By the way, that sounds awesome. But what I would say is, like, that's a great point, and it's another reason why I like The Force Awakens a lot. In the theater, I loved it. It's a lot of fun. In a lot of ways, it's more fun than this movie.
Right.
But to me, what sets this movie apart from that one is that that one's basically just a Star Wars tribute band. And this one is a story that it's like the spirit of Star Wars, but it's someone's unique take on it. And
I think that's a great way to put it.
And, you know, as much as I like hearing a good tribute band, they can be really great, and they're really fun. The more you listen to them, the more you're like, maybe I should just go back and listen to the actual band, you know? Whereas with this movie, you're not going to do that, because it stands on its own better. I mean, I'm sure The Force Awakens could be great if you didn't know A New Hope existed, but I do, and I don't think it can stand on its own in the same way.
Yeah, you know, we actually brought this up in the, I'm going to start calling it the Lost Podcast now.
The greatest podcast in history.
Yeah, we brought this up, and I've been thinking about it more, talking about this idea of music. We brought up that, you know, like, Johnny Cash sometimes would play songs. The obvious one everyone's going to think of is Hurt by Nine Inch Nails, but I think a better version, if you like old country music at all, is Don Gibson has a song called Sea of Heartbreak, but Johnny Cash does it better. What you often find, I think, when it comes to good covers, so not stupid covers that are made just to make money, but like really good covers of songs, is the original is sort of lovable for its flaws, but like a good cover, like you said, refers back to the nostalgia of the original, but really does something new with it. And, you know, Episode 4, I think everyone will agree with this, the entire middle of it drags really bad. But you can never, I mean, there was just nothing like it beforehand. And with each movie made, that dragging in the middle might be more pronounced. But, I mean, I forget how old you are, but, like, you remember when they revamped Episode 4 and put it out?
Oh, yeah.
It was trash, what they added.
Yeah.
Pure trash.
Yeah.
So, to me, I think that Episode 7, in many ways, might be, like, you said, like this awesome cover of Episode 4 with like a big flashy band, you know, making it appropriate. The one thing that I'll give Episode 7 is 1 through 3 were so bad and were so disappointing that Episode 7 will always live in my heart as the movie that made it fun to go back to Star Wars movies.
Yes.
And I wasn't ashamed for my children to watch them.
Exactly, yeah. But it was like a palate. It's like a palate cleanser is what it was.
Eating sushi. But I think that you're right. If we keep up with movies of the caliber of like Rogue One sort of level, Episode 7's star will diminish. But to me, it's really going to be interesting to see what Episode 8 is like. I think Episode 7's enduring likability really hinges on what they do with Episode 8. Like, are they going to actually move the story along, or is it going to be like,
yeah, like if it's just
revamp of Episode 5.
Yeah, if it's just, you know, Kylo Ren says, or someone says, you know, you're not my father to somebody or whatever,
yeah,
that's just, it's over. You know, I'm out.
Right.
Yeah, they're gonna
You're
have
not
to.
My uncle.
Yeah, whatever.
They're tricking us.
You're
yeah.
not my third cousin. You know, something like that. Yeah, I don't know where they're gonna go. I'm hopeful, of course, but dude, I don't know if you heard this. This is totally off subject. That you know how the next year's off center, or not next year's 2018, when they do the Han Solo movie, the next off center movie. Did
yeah.
you know about this? That Donald Glover is gonna be Lando Calrissian. I think that sounds awesome. I don't know how that's gonna go, but it got me really excited. I'm like, that is interesting.
So is it Troy or Childish Gambino that he's gonna channel? Anyway, that's
exactly.
probably more small ball than most people. But yeah, that will be interesting, man.
It really
Him
will.
And who's doing Hans?
They have not cast Han yet. That's another thing. Somebody was suggesting people, and they were like, somebody suggested Chris Pratt, and for a minute, I'm like, huh, that seems just about close enough, but it's kind of not there. He's just got
yeah.
a little bit too much of a goofy winsomeness, you know? You need somebody with a little more gravitas than that.
Well, you know what, too, is, you know, this is going off subject, but I'm all for it. Look, I don't think there's anybody, like, handsome rake enough to pull it off. Like, who is the handsome rakish guy that you still love? Like, I don't think there's a young actor that I would even throw in to, like, young Harrison Ford territory. Can those even exist in 2016, or have they been, you know, consented out of this world?
Yeah, they've been kind of PC'd out. I don't know. It's weird. You're right. It's like Chris Pratt is close to what they're going for, but he's missing something. And I don't know. No one's coming to mind. No one's coming to mind.
No.
But the Lando thing.
We must wait for it. It's like, same, you know, we're waiting for a new St. Benedict to be born. We're waiting for a new Harrison Ford to
exactly.
be born. Exactly. Our society is trash, man. We're
yeah.
done.
And these are equally important, these two things we're waiting for. But yeah, I mean, if they're going that route with the Donald Glover, and they went and they made this like a weird little, they're young rogues and they're whatever, I think that sounds like a very interesting movie. But anyway, and this movie is not at all like a swashbuckler, happy-go-lucky movie. So that's where I do agree with the reviewers, but I'm fine with that. I think that's great. I think it's neat that they followed up such a crowd-pleaser with something that's a little more solemn.
Well, so someone who I thought wrote a really interesting review is Gabriel Sanchez over at Opus Publicum, who actually writes a lot about traditional Catholicism and East-West issues in the church. But then he's also a big pro-wrestling and Star Wars fan, so every so often you get reviews like that. So he was saying with Rogue One that this is kind of like everybody who grew up with Star Wars, when they imagine saying the words an adult Star Wars movie, like an adult... like consideration of Star Wars thing.
Adult in the good sense of that word.
Yes, grown up. Not
right.
The other one. Yeah. Is that adult, so that guy, an adult Star Wars consideration. This would be the movie, right? It's still fantastical. It's still talking about the Force. It's still space pirates racing around space. But it does, like, it doesn't get down to the nitty gritty. It's not like it's the Hurt Locker Star Wars edition or anything.
No. Right.
But it does, like, bring up, you know, something... Okay, people have gotten really mad. Oh, right, we're not doing spoilers yet. Should we not make the spoiler part yet?
Let's wait just a minute. For the people who are going to check out, give me your final verdict, what you would give it out of 10. And I know you're like me, you're a purist. You like to see a movie more than once before you give a final verdict. But your initial take, where does this fit... you know, ranked against the prequels and the realquels and all that.
Well, so again, in the last episode, I said 8, and then I heard your 8.5, and then immediately regretted what I said. So I'm doing 8.5 today. It's a very strong 8.5. And this is all, like you said, bearing with the fact that I've only seen it once. So we'll see what subsequent viewings do. Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, is untouchable.
Transcendent.
Transcendent. We talked about this in the last episode. I think that it's the one Star Wars movie that can legitimately be in conversations about just good movies in general. It's not Casablanca or The Third Man or The Night of the Hunter, but it is legitimately a movie that I think if you are going to be a movie buff, you have to watch. So episode 5, untouchable. The question starts to be how you rate it, in my mind, between 4 and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just out of trying to outthink myself, I would go 5-4, Rogue One 6. But there's a part of me that goes, stop acting like you have to give 4 unequal deference. And if you're talking about enjoyability, then maybe I would go 5 and then have 6 and Rogue One battle it out 4.
Yeah.
And then everything else. I mean, 1 through 3, when we talked about this in the last episode, I grew up thinking that, I mean, these last few years, that Phantom Menace was the absolute worst. But I was wrong. Episode 2 is a floating turd in space. But
yeah.
There's no better way to, I mean, it is rancid. It is like expecting to eat ribeye steak. And then you're like, oh, this was just a bunch of frothing maggots painted like a ribeye steak. And now I have to eat all of it.
Right.
When I showed my kids the Clone Wars, like, I was ashamed. It is so terrible.
It's funny. It's funny you say that, because we agree almost completely. I've had to go through these with my kids now multiple times, which is great. They love them. But when you watch 4 now, I know it's historically important. I know, I guess, because of that, it's better. But man, it drags. And I have no shame in saying that I would watch Return of the Jedi twice today before I watch 4 again. So for me right now, This Rogue One is right there with 4 and 6, but I'm ranking 6 higher, man. I know, I get that the Ewoks are stupid, they're too cute, whatever. I don't care, I enjoy the movie. Isn't that what you're supposed to do when you're watching the Star Wars? You're supposed to enjoy it. This isn't, like, super high culture, so I'm going to go ahead and say I prefer Jedi.
I don't actually hate the Ewok part. To me, and there's really cool elements to the beginning of 6. To me, there's just some stuff where, like, you could see George Lucas slipping a bit. Like, the intro needs to be watched by every budding director to point out, this is not how you reintroduce your cast of characters.
Exactly. It's like, here's a character. Here's the other character. Oh, there's the other character.
They were all hidden in cloaks, and you're like, ta-da!
Yeah, like, one of those would have been good. Yeah, one of those is good. Yeah, Porno Leia is always interesting when you're watching with the kids too. They probably didn't need to have that revealing of an outfit on her, but
go. That was Carrie Fisher, like, lost a bet or something.
It's supposed to be degrading, and it degrades everyone. But the prequels, when I was younger, I was like, oh, 2's pretty good, 1 was terrible. Now I'm like, you know, Jake Long, is that his name? Lloyd? Jake Lloyd. Jake Long was a football player. Foosball player.
Right, a little different.
You think so, but they got more in common than you realize. But as bad as he was in that movie, it's like, oh, this is cute. They found this little kid, and he's acting like he's Anakin Skywalker. You know, it's cute. It's endearing. But when you see Hayden Christensen, who's a grown man, and a grown enough man to be in a movie, you know, he's supposed to be the terror of all galaxies, and he's just this whiny, petulant little mouse with a rat tail. It's horrific what he did to them, and for him, and you know, we'll talk about more in the spoiler section. I just cannot believe that man is Darth Vader. Sorry, it's not working for me.
In 3, you know, you can, like, really try hard. Like, maybe in 3, he sort of has the look a bit, but like you can kind of see, like, oh, he's turning dark on us. But in 2, you're just like, really? Because, like, why hasn't every horrible, you know, teenager who can't control his lusts well became Darth Vader? You know, I mean, like, it doesn't add up.
I mean, 3 is definitely the best of the prequels, and it's okay. You know, it's decent, but. And I don't know if it's because of the backstory and all that. It's just, you can't, I'm sorry, you cannot just, you know, make him a couple years older and make his hair longer and say he's really dark now, because those Natalie Portman, the rolling, the literal rolling through the fields.
The rolling down the hill.
Yeah.
Like, if I could have known that, like, they're like, all right, Bo, you saw the Running Down the Hill part. If you drink this amount of whiskey, you don't have to remember it the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even a big drinker at the time, but I would have said, fill her up. Because,
right.
There's points in my life where I'm going around having a good day, and if I remember that part, I'll be like, this day is now at least mixed at best.
Yep. It's that bad. It's a day ruiner. I'm going to use that on the podcast. This scene is so bad, it's a day ruiner. Some of the scenes in that movie are like week ruiners.
Yeah, there are week ruiners. I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. But there's movies that I've watched that I've gone like, I can never... You know which one no one should watch, but Requiem for a Dream is a week ruiner. That movie is a definite week ruiner. Do not go watch it.
You know, that's...
It doesn't have good points.
That's funny you're saying that, because I've been meaning to watch that for a long time. I'm going to do that. If something can ruin my week, it's worth seeing at least once. All right, now let's go ahead and, after the music, we're going to go to spoilers, so anyone who hasn't seen it, check out now. All right, we're back. There we go. So, spoiler section. I wanted to tie in. Darth Vader appears in this movie, everyone. That is a spoiler. But it's not really, because he's in the trailer. This Darth Vader is such a bad donkey that,
yeah.
I mean, I cannot for one second believe that Hayden Christensen is that Darth Vader. Not for a nanosecond. This dude is a force of evil that no one can withstand.
Oh my gosh. The scenes leading up to that scene even are great. So the battle scenes are some of the best space battle scenes of the whole movie. I mean, of all of them. You know, one of the things people will complain about, like, the prequels and the actual first three, is they'll go, the first three are obviously better movies, but come on, admit it, man, like, 1 through 3, the sort of sword fighting is so much better that at least it's more fun to watch. And episode 4, like, is pretty, like, wow, like, everybody's lightsaber skills are rusty.
Right.
But I actually think a lot of the times with 1 through 3, there's, like, way too much action, both in space and lightsabers and everything like this.
Exactly.
What I'll say...
desensitized to it. Just like the special effects. Like, that world could be cool, but it's just so overwhelming and everything is so weird that it becomes white noise.
Also, most of those worlds are not cool. But yes, I see your point.
I disagree. There are some cool ideas, just poor execution, I guess.
They were cool paragraphs written years before they actually made them. Yes, I will give you that. So, to me, the in-space scene, one of the best, it reminds me of a movie that you've now promised you're going to watch, Serenity, which to me has one of the best
galactic
movies.
Is that Serenity Now?
No,
that's different.
No,
different.
No,
it's different. Okay. No, I haven't seen that, but I will. But yeah, no, the space battles are incredible. The actual land battles are incredible, which leads me also to another point that the blue haired crowd is up in arms about, that like there's actually some little bit of insurgent guerrilla type warfare on the part of the rebels.
Yeah, so, but before we get to that, the last thing I want to say is that part with Darth Vader is literally up there with sort of the Hitchcocks of the world of being, making you feel claustrophobic about a scene where you know how it will end. That's what's amazing about the best movies. People, they could, like, the director could walk out and in the first 5 minutes be like, ruin all spoilers, tell you everything that's going to happen. But if they're good, the movie will still be fantastic. And so Darth Vader going down the hall, killing the people in the space jet that is getting the plans to the Death Star away, which, because you've watched episode 4, you know it's going to get away, but you can actually suspend belief and be like, dude, get through the door, you're not going to do it in time, oh my god, like, it's that claustrophobic. It is so well done. Maybe one of the best Darth Vader scenes the whole movie, or the whole series, which is incredible to think about.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of the best scenes in any Star Wars film, really. It's great. But let's go, so I jumped ahead. Let's go back to the hand-wringing over the guerrilla warfare and stuff. I found not a lot of meat on that bone. Nothing really tripped my radar as far as moral problems. Now, characters have, you know, muddied motivations. They're not 100% pure in their motivations. They have quandaries, but it seems to me that basically the good guys are the good guys and they choose good in the end.
Yes, get an opening scene where one of the main characters in the rebellion of this time kills an informant as to make it easier for him to escape and not have to worry about the informant ratting him out. And people go like, this is different than the rebels, I know. And you're like, well, Hans did shoot first. And,
exactly.
I mean, people go like, well, that was before he was a part of the resistance. I'm like, dude, the resistance is accepting space pirates and their huge Wookiee assassins. Like, if that's not morally compromised enough, they're taking all comers, and sure, I'm sure they want you to, like, you know, amp it up a bit and be a little bit better than the Empire. But like, this is the movie about how they all coalesced into the rebels that were fighting for the good cause. That's like half of the whole point of the story arc. So I don't know what they were wanting them to do, to like be good from the first 5 minutes. What dynamic they want? They were already complaining about some of these characters being flat.
Yeah, exactly.
They'll say, these characters are flat, and then you're like, so you want to take out the only moral development that most of them go through? I don't get what they're getting at.
They're like, these characters are cardboard. They're archetypes. They're not real people. And then they're like, no, these characters are too realistic. We need idealized characters. You know, it's like, whatever, man. You know, it's the Star Wars. Just kind of kick back and enjoy. And if your kid's got a question, you go ahead and say, no, that wasn't right. You know, I mean, it's okay. Not every action in a movie is going to be moral. It's okay. There would be no movies if there weren't immoral activities.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to, the guy who is going to go up and he's going to kill Jin's father, but then doesn't. I'm like, well, he didn't. I mean,
right. He chose good. Exactly. Yep. Now,
it's not Quentin Tarantino.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not Reservoir Dogs here. It's fine. Let's talk about one. My friend, I don't know if you've ever listened to the podcast. Don't tell me if you haven't. It'll hurt my feelings. I have a friend named Elliot. I call him the Brewmaster General. He doesn't really like that name, so I'm just going to call him the General from now on. The General says to me after this picture, he says, basically, you could summarize this movie in one sentence, which is, everybody dies or is at least partially a robot. And if you think about it, that's basically true. Because Darth Vader's part robot, the CGI characters are part robot, everybody else dies, good and bad.
Yeah, I'm actually impressed. This reminded me of one of the most formative movie moments of my life, which was when we got to see Transformers the animated movie, not the trash new one.
I was going
to
say, if you say a Michael Bay movie, you're automatically kicked off the podcast.
No. Transformers the movie, which was awesome enough to kill off all of the beloved characters within 20 minutes. Of course, they were doing this so they could introduce a new toy line and you had to buy all of them. But we didn't know that, and that's not important for right now. But killed off all the characters in 20 minutes, including Optimus Prime and Cust. So for all of us white trash kids in Oklahoma, it was like the perfect movie. And so to me, if you're going to be, you know, love the story enough to have characters that you love enough to kill them all off, I was impressed. I'm impressed that they made a movie where they didn't try to smuggle in some of their new characters so that they could keep selling toys.
Right.
Good
this
for
is
Star Wars.
This as much as this fixes holes in the plot of A New Hope, including why the Death Star has such an obvious weakness. It also is a standalone movie in the sense that these characters aren't going to go on and make, you know, Rogue One Part Two, Rogue One Part Two.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I do appreciate that. The final thing I wanted to touch on real quick, because we're running pretty long here, as much as I enjoy talking to you on the second greatest podcast of all time, is that this movie, for all the moral hand-wringing, is actually one of the most religious of the films, because it actually shows how these characters have the Force interacting in their like everyday lives. You don't have to be like a Jedi special caste to invoke and have the Force. And they even have like a temple and guardians of the temple and like priestly type figures that aren't Jedis. I mean, it's crazy how much it develops the universe of religion in Star Wars.
Well, and you know, one of the things that people bash, and rightly so, about Phantom Menace is, how much did we end up talking about, like, trade negotiations, and why are we talking about trade negotiations, and oh my goodness, I never want to hear the word trade negotiation again. but this actually did a good job of taking something that could be purely awful nerddom and be like, oh, kyber crystals. They could have talked about that and made it so absolutely horrible, but they didn't. They did this great job of pointing out, okay, why is the Empire up in people's business? Why are the locals mad? Why would there be insurgents? And it starts to go back to, this is how the Force interacts with people's lives who believe in it. Because if people will remember, in 4 through 6, and 7 is its own case, but 4 through 6, everyone's kind of like, should we really believe in the Force? Isn't that just make-believe?
And right, right.
Now we know why, because all the Jedi are dead, save two. And then, like, 1 through 3, let's not even get into Metachlorians and how stupid all that is.
They're horrific.
This does a good job. Yeah, this does a good job of talking about why, how there's people who are non-Jedi that have attachment to the Force. And, you know, the guy who, you know, he's walking out and somehow gets missed by all of the shots. You know, the Force is with me and I'm the Force.
Right, divine intervention.
He had a truly faith-filled moment. We're not trying to be syncretist here, but in a movie, no. Tolkien sort of way, it's very interesting.
The drawing parallels between that world and this one, not suggesting that that's real, of course.
So I agree with you completely. Is this might have been, and there's a someone who wrote an article about this in the Circa Institute. I forget the guy's name, but he said something similar to what we did. Is, you know, in 2016, it's almost amazing to think there were screenwriters and a director who would care this much to add that element and not overdo it. I'm frankly impressed.
Yes, I was very pleasantly surprised. Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by pretty much everything about the movie. It was great. If you're a fan, go see it. Before and if you're not a fan, like Bo said, it's a good introduction point because as long as you go in with an open mind, I think you don't have to know the history of Star Wars to get it right away.
And the Grand Moff, I thought they did the Grand Moff too. People who are worried about the CGI need to settle down.
Yes, there are more than one CGI characters in this, and I think they handle both. Good enough. You know, again, it's Star Wars. We're not looking for Da Vinci here. But before I let you go, I have one even more important question for you, and that is, have you seen the movie Metropolitan?
No, Bud saw it, and I have to go. He says I have to go see it now. I thought you guys were saying Metropolis at
no,
first.
No, very different. Like, also good, very different.
But I was going to be impressed. I was like, Metropolis? Wow, we're throwing out silent European movies like references. But no, I've not seen Metropolitan. Have you seen Mud?
Mud, no.
But with Matthew McConaughey, like part of the...
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I have not gotten to see it yet, but I hear it's great, right?
Yes, it's very much... Those are about my people. That's very much... They're Arkansas, but it's just the other side of the Arkansas River, so... That's one you gotta watch too.
Alright, man. Well, I will do that. You watch Metropolitan, and everyone else go see Rogue One. And, you know, if you happen to be listening on December 28th, check out The Uncommon Good. I'll be on there if you want to hear my voice in better audio quality, along with Bo's voice in better audio quality. Go check it out. Thank you for coming on, Bo. I really appreciate it, man.
Well, thank you, and I look forward to being on more. We have plenty to talk about.
Hey, man, maybe this won't even record correctly, and we'll have to do a tribute to the second best podcast ever.
Like rusting, Russian nesting dolls of podcasts.
Levels within levels. All right, I'll see you later, man.
Yeah. Bye. Take care.
So, that is it for the Catholic Movie Guy podcast of Christmas week. We'll be back again next week, I'm sure, with our regular guest, the Tim Man. Not sure exactly what the topic will be, but I'm sure that it will be amazing. So until then, have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see you next week.